Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today I'm proud to bring you Age of Heroes, The Elysium Project. But first, a song, Golden Bough by Virginia Ackley. Of Heroes, and tonight I'm proud to bring you our one, our only, our Astrid. Greetings and welcome, Astrid.
Greetings and welcome Hercules and our listeners.
Yes, I saw all the topics you wanted to discuss and I was amazed. How are we going to fit all of that information into an hour?
Well, we'll start it and see where it takes us. I will give you a little background on some of the things going on. I mean, the weather is beautiful up here in Sussex County now. And with this, we have all the farmers markets. And we basically have quite a few. In Sussex County, we have one Sparta's Farmers Market, the Wantage mm-hmm. Farmers Market, Hapacon Marketplace, Sussex County Farmers Market at the Fairgrounds, the Vernon Makers Market, Blairstown Farmers Market, and the Lafayette Farmers Market, which is like quite a bit to choose from. Quite a bit. And then the fairgrounds are in full hilt, needless to say. Last week they had one of their big gatherings, you know, the Crawfish Festival. Mm-hmm. And this weekend they're going to have on the 11th from 8 to 4 for a $5 admission fee. At the Richards buildings, there's going to be a card fair. And I'm thinking it's basically sports memorabilia, cards related to sports. Mm-hmm. And you can register at info@anythingbutcommons.com or just go right onto the website for the fair, Sussex County Fairgrounds. And then on 6/24, what a lot of people are waiting for is the 12th annual Rock Ribs and Ridges Festival. And that is the 24th to the 26th. It's quite long. Yeah. And each day there are different musicians going on, quite a bit of food. And you can go to the rocksribsandridges.com/artists to see who is playing which day. So you know which day you'd like to go in terms of your favorite groups, because it does get expensive.
Yeah,
and then on the 28th, Luna Fair is coming back to the Sussex County Fairgrounds. I'm not sure if this is correct, but they had it listed as from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m., which does not sound right. It's always been 5 to 10. 5 to 8 is quite a short amount of time for the amount of people that show up for the Luna Fair. So I would check the on the website for lunafair.com. The tickets are not available yet. I checked. They said they will be opening them up soon for tickets. And then you can check. Usually it's for a very small fee, like $11.11, you know, something mystical. And it's always amazing. The weather is much nicer. You will not have the problem with, with tents flying away with high winds, and you won't have to wear a coat, which is a nice thing, as some of the early ones had happening. It was horrific. So I would check on that if you're interested. And it's always a really, really good time. It really is. And then also I saw that the Karen Ann Quinlan Hospice is having their 22nd butterfly release celebration, and that is this Sunday. It's only going to be on one location. It's going to be at the Sussex County Community School, the college, and that's from 2 to 4. They are having a Zoom event June 17th, which is a Friday. So, again, you can go on to the Karen Ann Quinlan Hospice site and find out more details about this. And if you knew about it and you purchased the special tribute to $20 for each person, the names will be read, and you'll get a program if you go in terms of who is being honored on that particular day. It's a really beautiful, really beautiful event, I must say.
Yes, it is.
Besides that, I thought this was cute. You know, I love the Sussex County Library, all the different programs, and it's way too numerous to enumerate. So my suggestion is that you go onto their site to find out all the things going on at the Sussex County Library. It's amazing, all the programs, and they have many branches. So you can actually, if you don't see one particular event at one, you can go drive to another one. What they're doing now is they are having forgiveness for fines. So if you never returned books, movies, music, and games, you do not have to fear a shakedown when you go to the library. So since February 17th, all old fines held by the library have been purged from the borrower's records. So
that
that's a nice
great
thing. You can go back. Yeah, you can go back again. They're looking for people. You know, and you know, sometimes people cannot control when they get to the library, particularly seniors, working parents. And then the kids have so much going on in between school and different athletic events. It's very easy for books to get lost. People would say, well, how could that happen? It's easy. It's very easy. Think of all the times that you have put something down in a safe place and you have not been able to locate it.
Very, very true.
Right, right. So rather than say, you know, how could that be? And you have to be responsible. Sometimes we do so much, even the children, not just adults. We're doing so much all the time that it's very, very hard to keep track with what's going on. And you think you have it under control, and somewhere along the line, you lose it. You lose it.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, you know, I will send some of these things to you in the email, but a lot of these great activities, you can go right on to Sussex County Events. You can go to the Chamber of Commerce. You could basically, there are many, many things going on now. It starts in that spring, and it goes on and on to late autumn.
Huh.
That's the good thing.
Sounds
it
like
really
there's
many- is. Now, I really wanted to touch upon subjectivity and objectivity, and there's so many ways that we can look upon this, but there's never just one way of looking at things, as we know, but there
right
are times when you just wonder where sensibility has gone. Has it gone out the window? And basically, I would like to start with all these this last shooting, which was horrific, because that's what's going on right now and commanding most of the news attention and really eating and tugging at our hearts, because Robb Elementary School shooting, which was in late May, is not the first one, and it won't be the last one. And I think it's amazing to look at this from both viewpoints, because you can look at it very objectively and look at the facts and say, well, a child went in, 18 years old, well, man-child, I shall say, a man-child, because 18 is not a child anymore. But there's still a lot more growth that can be happening. But he fatally shot 19 students and two teachers. and he wounded 17 other people. And he shot his grandmother in the forehead, severely wounding her at home. To this, again, has been so traumatic, but you have the subjectivity. You have those that have been involved that were either onlookers watching while all this happened and not seeing action being taken and knowing their kids or their family were involved in there and wanting to see them saved, yet being prevented, and the police action, which was so unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable, really. It's the only other word I can use. And you can look at it from the public sector, and you can look at it from the private sector, as we've done on many things. Publicly, people are horrified. They're absolutely horrified that this could be allowed to happen. Like, when is it going to stop, is what people say. That's the terminology. When is it going to stop? And then you could look at subjectivity of the people that were involved that were on the public sector. I'm still trying to figure out how it took so long for action and why there was no key to get into the door. And even afterwards with people in the hallway, with officials in the hallway, nothing happened for like an hour.
Right.
And you have to wonder about accountability. Like, where is the accountability? And when I read in the paper that that Texas has laws, whereas they cannot be sued, the police department cannot be penalized for mishaps, as they call them, or situations that occur like this. Yeah, there's no lawsuits involved. You can't hold, they can't be held responsible, is how they word it. And I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute. Other public employee that I know is held liable.
Right.
Even private citizens, if you're driving a car, you are liable and you can be sued. But I have a very hard time understanding this state law thing that, you know, that basically the states have the right to pass certain laws. And we've seen this not just with guns, but we've seen it with birth control, with abortion. It's very subjective to the political party in charge. And I'm not even going to say it's the political party, their beliefs, but yet it may not be in line with the voters that put them in that position.
Right.
And it's autonomous power. No, it's absolute. And I'm looking at the states where this occurs, and I see a pattern. And I see a pattern. I also see a pattern with, I don't know how to exactly put this, but the economics of like what's allowable based upon the economics. It seems that a lot of these people that commit these mass shootings, and it doesn't matter if it's someone that they consider a student, you know, like up to 18, or an adult, you know, there are some real issues. And I love when one particular party says, well, no, it's not a matter of gun control. And here comes the subjectivity. It's a matter of schools have to do more. Schools only do what's allowable by the local government.
Right.
By the local government. And people will say, well, the Board of Ed. No, the Board of Ed definitely is in line with the local politicians, whether it be a mayor, a city council, whatever. There is there's a definite tie between the Board of Ed, the city council, a town council, whatever. And very often what the school may want to do in terms of programs and health is limited by what is mandated by the Board of Ed and the local governing powers. And a simple example will be attendance. Well, all of a sudden, in order to have things look good on paper for the township, the Board of Ed, and for the town to get funds, here we go again, numbers, little circumstances will be changed. Well, can't you give that test 2 times, 3 times? Can you give them extended time to get the work in? And when I say extended time, there are some school districts that will give high school students, maybe you can come on Saturdays at the end to make up, if you come 1 or 2 Saturdays, and that'll make up your attendance. Or something like, well, no, 55 will be the lowest you can give because that's a failing grade. If they don't do it, you can't give a 0. There are many mandates and restrictions placed on school teachers and the administrators to make sure that certain numbers are kept down, even in terms of behavioral problems. No, you can't suspend that many students. Doesn't matter what they did. It doesn't look good on paper. So again, you know, we may look at it one way. We see these different events happening, but we are not in the subjective situation of having to deal with it, and how everyone has to is in a different position. You know, the objectivity and subjectivity and so many things come down to how things look. Autonomous power. Because in one situation, in one town, in a state, what is considered allowable is very different from another one. So I think many people have this concept of what school is and the way school should be. And it's not. It's not what you think it is. It isn't, and it changes constantly. And I'm still having a very hard time with this recent killing in Texas. And that's what it is. Let's stop calling it, you know, mass shooting. No, it's killing.
Yes,
killing,
it is.
Unprovoked killing. And how we look at it in terms of, well, why didn't somebody have a key? Why didn't custodian have the key? Why were there not extra sets of keys? Why was the police SRO officer not there? So there are a lot of questions, and I'm hoping they get to the base of it. But when I hear people say, well, you know, it's just mental issues, or no. The picture is much larger. It is what is allowable. What is allowable? And that is looking at it not just from what is allowable in a school, and it can be very different from one school and to another one, so many, not even that many miles away. And some of us have a very hard time understanding this because we think the school situation is something that we know. It varies across the whole nation, and within each state it varies, and within each district it varies, depending on who is running the school and what has been mandated and what they're told is allowable and what isn't allowable.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, like, what your perception of the school situation is, you know, with your experience.
I personally have nothing against guns. I have nothing against the hunting if you're going to eat the animal that you're hunting.
Exactly.
But I really think that we should have, just like we have a training period to get your driver's license and age requirements and because, you know, if you have a certain disability that would prevent you from driving safely, that either can be accommodated or there would be restrictions. But there don't seem to be any restrictions on buying weapons that are too powerful to use for hunting.
Exactly.
They're used for killing. And to have those easily accessible by kids who are not yet, don't have the judgment yet of adults. Folks who shouldn't be doing dangerous things. Like, I believe also there should be the red flags, you know, that if someone fits into certain categories, that more investigation be put into whether they're fit to bear a firearm or not. And I also believe that firearms should be taken away if there are certain dangers, like if the guns are not locked up and there are children in the house, for instance.
Right.
So I if people want guns, they're gonna have guns. As gun advocates point out, you can kill somebody with a hammer or a screwdriver. So okay, granted. And again, some people hunt to feed their families, and I have no objection to that. But otherwise, there really is no reason for people to have these things. And if they're collectors and hobbyists, okay, that's fine. But they should be able to keep these things out of the hands of people who are going to do something horrendous with it.
Most definitely. And that's to say, and when I hear someone shout out about, well, the Second Amendment, my Second Amendment right, yes, you have a right to bear arms, but there should be qualifications to do this. Why was that started, the right to bear arms? Think back to that time period. Here we go. You know, when people did have to protect themselves because there really was no law and order. And as a country that was begotten out of violence, a young country, the United States, it amazes me that the level of violence within this country compared to other countries. And we're talking civilized countries, supposedly a leading country, a modern country, a country that other countries look up to, you know, for protection. And nowhere else in the world is this problem so prevalent in terms of mass murders. And that's what it is, mass murders. And it's not all children. So when I hear, you know, the Republican Party go on and on about, and not all of them, obviously, because there's so many Republicans that are disgusted with this as well, because you have to be able to empathize. You as a leader have to be able to and look after the welfare of the masses. That's what your job is. And things have changed. But when you look at the concept of violence and how acceptable it is, it seems to be a very subjective thing. So you have a governor in Texas who's going on and raving and ranting. He was, you know, on television, and I'm watching him, and I'm saying, how can someone talk like this in an educated time, in an educated world? And then I have to remember where they come from. It's a small little area where it's the good old boy system. And they all protect one another, and it's this very bizarre concept of control and power. That's what it is. And when you look at that versus places, states that are a little more, I don't want to say educated because it comes off very elitist, but a little more in tune with what is happening outside of their locality. That's the best way of putting it. Aware of what's going on and in touch with what's going on outside of their little locality. When you start to see, when you're living only with one group of people, same education, same color, same, you know, generations living in an area, you tend to see things only one way because you've never been exposed to anything. And so there is this fear of change. This is how it's been. This is how it's always been. It's very subjective. Yet you go to another area of the state where there's maybe a university there or more businesses there where they're employing people from other areas of the state. They become aware of what it's like to work and live side by side with other nationalities, other races. And believe it or not, male and female together. It's not just all one type that that works, you know, that makes the system work. And it's a fear of losing power. And I look at some of these situations with these students that have done that, and a lot of it has to do with fear and not feeling accepted or having a violent type of an attitude, and yet that no one has made the effort to flag that particular person. Because I know when I was teaching, if there was a situation, by law, we had to flag the situation and bring it to a team, not just the principal, to the team. And if someone said something that was suspect, whether it be a diaper situation, abuse, in terms of other kind of abuse, abuse of students towards students, bullying, it was mandatory to go down to the team and make them aware of what was going on, and then they looked into it.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, very subjective. Again, there's subjectivity if someone is tied to the situation in terms of politics. I'm sure you remember there was a situation, I think it was in Glen Ridge was the town. I'm not sure the name of the town, but it was that area. I know I was living in Bloomfield at the time, and it was close, so it must have had to be Glen Ridge, where this one girl was, as they call it, mentally deficient. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, the football team took advantage of this girl because of the ties to the local politics. Again, subjectivity. We read something like this and we think it's horrific because you're looking at it objectively, saying this is horrific. How could this have been allowed? How? Well, because one of the boys on the team was somehow tied to the police department. And, you know, the father. So, therefore, it just went by the wayside, and I'm sure they hushed it up and threatened people that wanted to do something. How it eventually came out a year or so later, I don't even remember, but I remember it was unbelievable because, again, there were two ways of looking at this. Looking at this poor girl, and what if it was my family, and what had happened to her. And yet, looking at it from the other point of view, how they, whole group of people, managed to cover this up because of, well, she was mentally deficient. Well, that's wonderful. Her life doesn't matter. More importantly than her was the situation of entitlement and empowerment by this group. And that's where it's just totally unbelievable, you know, and again, it goes down to subjectivity and objectivity. How are you going to deal with it? All these different situations in these, I remember there was one particular school shooting with this one boy. I remember what state it was, but the horror of it was, is the mother, I don't know if it was a mother or the stepmother, had even contacted the local police, but it was the attitude, again, a smaller town, you know, boys will be boys. And again, the subjectivity of maybe knowing the father and letting it go. And it was something with guns. Well, he has a gun out. So again, it depends on the situation, the locality, and what's going on in the local government and the police department. There will be some towns where people, the police chief or the people, will be horrified of things that go on, and there will be reprimands, and people will be called in, just like in the school system, you will be called in. And yet there are other ones where it is just swept under the rug and allowed, basically allowed, and then things escalate. And then what happens when they escalate, just as we saw what happened in Texas with this. You know, the escalation where this wasn't done. Well, the doors didn't close. There's no key. Or was there really a plan in place, or was it just on paper? Here we go again. You know, things look good on paper, but that doesn't mean they're happening. There has to be accountability. And I can go way back to a time when I was starting my teaching career, and there were a lot of problems in the schools, a lot of problems with discipline and answering back and total disregard of respect because there was no continuity. There was nothing set down that was continual. It was left up to the principals or the teacher or whatever until one particular administrator and somebody I was involved with came in and offered to pull something together for the school system, which was a Comer system. And it was basically a set of checks and balances. contracts were sent to their parents. Everything was written in the beginning of the school year in terms of this is the expectation for your child at this age level, because you can't expect a young child to behaving the same way. They're in the process of learning and growing. And that's how they learn, through mistakes and social interaction and eventually, you know, through being not told, but learning how things bring rewards and consequences, which is results in their own making a moral judgment for themselves. Well, you know, this isn't a good thing to do. As they get older, hopefully they've managed that, and then the consequences get a little harder, because you should know by now that this is not allowable. But then again, you would have very general things like follow directions the first time given, written positively, leave your seat only with permission. Leave your seat or the room. Not saying you cannot, do not. Do not is not a good thing to say. But saying this is the climate that's present. This is a climate that exists. That's what you do. You know, respect materials. Clean your own area. You know, it always works better when you have the expectations than if you're putting it in a negative way.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked. And there were rewards and there were consequences, you know, like class rewards and then also individual rewards. So consistently it works. Some schools it was. Other ones it was not, because the administration really didn't want to bother. And I can remember at one point in one school where everything was just flowing beautifully. And then in another one, child extremely disrespectful in the sixth grade. I mean, refusing to listen, you know, refusing to do anything during the lesson. And then it's a severe clause now, and you have to leave the room. Sixth grade boys. Okay. The child leaves, goes to an administrator, comes back 2 minutes later, smiling, saying, so-and-so, the vice principal, told me I can come back. All I have to do is apologize. Now, you know, Hercules, all the eyes were on me. And I could have just said, okay, and then what would that have told these children? That it didn't matter, that all of these different expectations, they don't matter. You can do what you want. And therefore, the ones that do cooperate start saying, well, why am I being so good? So I looked at this student, and he's taller than me, and I said, well, that's all and good, but you can go back to the administrator and say, I do not accept this apology. I have done my job. I have gone through all of the checkpoints. I have given you chances, and you chose to disregard everything that was set forth and did it 3-4 times. So you went out on a severe clause. So now that person needs to do her job. Never had a problem with that child again. The boys had, and of course the girls as well, but it was respect, because it's a matter of what's expected for me, it was expected for this child as well. So,
good.
Yeah, but again, there has to be consistency, and we have to start looking at objectivity and subjectivity, looking at it from both sides. And see the results. And I brought this up to a few of our congressmen. You know, when I take these petitions and everything, and they say add your comments, I brought it up, and I'm saying I have a very hard time understanding why you need a license to drive a car. You have to have a written test and a hands-on test. You have points against you, just like in school with the consequences. And if you have amassed so many points within a given amount of time, you lose your license and you're fined. And if you kill someone with an automobile that was meant for transportation and you have killed someone, it is a manslaughter charge most of the times. Why is it this way for cars? Well, it's because it's dangerous. Well, why isn't it that way for guns? And I'm amazed. I mean, you brought it up, but very few people even mention this. The politicians, you know, or on the news network, they're just starting to now. Why is that not comparable to having weapons? And again, I still think there has to be a national law, one that goes across statewide, you know, certain basic laws like there is for basically for cars. And yes, the age may vary, but still you will get fined. You will be charged if you murder someone with a car, whether it's accidental or intentional or a drinking issue. You know, it varies. The consequence varies, just like it should vary in school, depending on you know, the age and the purpose and how often it's happened. So we shall see. But then I also saw today that the House, pull this up because I've got so much stuff here, the House just passed a gun reform law. So let's look at this.
Did they? Oh, that's interesting.
Yes, just was on the air.
I know New York did.
It just was.
Ago.
Yeah. So let's see here. Let's see. House passes sweeping gun reform package. And let's see what it says here in terms of the details. And this is actual fact. The House voted Wednesday 223-204 to pass a wide package of gun control legislation called Protecting Our Kids Act. Now, I have a problem with that, too, and I'll tell you why in a minute. After lawmakers faced intense pressure to act in the wake of recent mass shootings, only 5 Republicans voted for the bill. Listen to the names. Anthony Gonzalez of Ohio, Fred Upton of Michigan, Brian Fitzpatrick of Pennsylvania, Adam Kissinger of Illinois, and Chris Jacobs of New York. 2 Democrats voted against it, Jared Golden of Maine and Kurt Schrader of Oregon. This measure is not expected to pass the Senate because of the GOP opposition to stricter gun control. A bipartisan group of senators is engaging in talks in an attempt to find common ground. Okay, so what does this mean? What does it include? Because, you know, a reform usually includes a lot of individual bills. Mm-hmm. So the measure would raise the legal age to buy certain semi-automatic centerfire rifles from 18 to 21 years old, establish new federal offenses for gun trafficking and for selling large-capacity magazines, allow local governments to compensate individuals who surrender such magazines through a buyback program. It would create a tax incentive for the retail sales of safe storage devices and criminal penalties for breaking new requirements, regulating firearm storage on residential premises. And it would also take steps to strengthen existing federal regulations on bump stocks and ghost guns. We are on a crusade for the children. Yes, there have been many killings in schools, and they've lost more children from gun violence than any other cause. But they're forgetting what happened in Buffalo. You can't be in a church. You can't be in a store anymore. Right. You know, I mean, these were adults, and they were killed. It's not just children that are killed. And I'm a little tired of them veering away from that. It's been a lot of that. But what about that movie theater in Colorado? What about supermarkets where someone went in and just shut everybody up because of where the supermarket was? What about churches because of a particular ethnic group in a church? It goes beyond children. This is a deeper problem in this country. And I know the House Republicans were not happy about this because they're going after law-abiding citizens' Second Amendment liberties. This is not about law-abiding citizens. And I don't understand, again, the subjectivity, why they keep bringing up law-abiding. No one is after law-abiding. This is to prevent the ones who do not follow the law, who haven't followed the law, and who should not have a weapon. You know, it's crazy because what happened in Buffalo, that shooting, was unbelievable because he was following the Great Replacement Theory, which is a white supremacist conspiracy theory. So here we go. It's just amazing how we're not looking at the fact that it isn't just children. It's people that should not have weapons, severe problems, and it's not just mental problems. It is also a violence factor who have never been told no because they're so afraid of an issue or because they have seen that certain people have consequences and certain don't. So again, it's that empowerment. And when you have a gun, you do feel mighty powerful. You do. And it takes the place of words, intelligence, logic. It's much easier to be angry and rather than to sit down and to discuss something, to pick up the gun. You always have a choice. So that's just that you have a choice to get up and leave a situation.
Very true.
You do not have the right to take someone else's life. If that job didn't work out and you have a horrible boss, you're going to go kill everybody in that post office? And people forget about that. Post offices have been often places where people have been killed, other employees, not just the bosses. Making everyone pay.
That's where we get the going postal, because we had a rash for a while of violent shootings and other deaths in post office. I remember that time.
Right, right. So it isn't just children. Yes, it is more horrific when it's a child, because a child did nothing to perpetuate this, and they're in a situation where in a place of protection, parents are sending their children off to school with the hope that they are safe, and they can't anymore. They can't. But it goes beyond that. There are people that are afraid to ride the subway because there are people that push people onto the tracks. And again, it comes back to the violence factor of not being accountable for their own selves. And let's start looking at this when they're younger and growing up and we see these things, so they're not having guns. When they're younger and that they're having an issue, that their disabilities or learning disabilities are taken care of, not that the school system cut back on social workers or teens or the programs that help children through their difficulties. That's the problem. These are the problems. It starts then, but there's no reason why it can't stop along the way. The only thing is that it's so much easier when people are younger. And yeah, we all know volatile personalities and we stay away from them. We stay away from them. When you're on the road, you know, more and more angry people, you know, trying to run you off the road, get out of my way, passing people because, oh, you were only going 10 miles over the speed limit. You know, again, there is subjectivity and objectivity. How are you going to look at it? And I'm sad to say, I mean, I'm thinking of these other countries that look at us. And objectively, they're saying, what's wrong with this country? Like, why? How can they justify this? You know, the UK had one situation. When was it in Scotland? And right away, they hammered down the laws and saying, you know, nobody should be owning semi-automatic weapons unless you're in a situation where you need it for war or, you know, catastrophic situations.
Mm-hmm.
Why is there that need? Well, and if you do, how many do you need? And again, I think there's a lot of there are people out there that need to have these cachet of weapons, And it just blows my mind. I don't know if they're waiting for another revolution. They think they're back in the revolutionary days where Britain is still going to come and take over, or the Indians are. And that's another story. The poor Native Americans, you know, they only fought back because of what was done to them. So again, you know, we have to start looking at the total picture and educating people more. And the sad part is, are they going to listen? Because again, this happened again, over and over again. And unless people are in a subjective situation, it doesn't matter to them. It doesn't matter. It's too far removed. It's somewhere else. It doesn't affect me. I noticed that there was a much different response to the Ukraine than there were to other war situations in this on social media, on television. And I remember back with the Vietnam War,
mm-hmm.
when they would have it on the news and they had all the film and they would show you live action and shots from it. And people were so upset and there were protests. And what happened? They took film off because visualization is very empowering. And to see what's going on in the Ukraine, I think, has made a major difference than reading about it to people in this country. If you watch BBC News, it's very different from ours. They've always had visualization. They've always showed things going on all over the world, whether it was Syria, you know, how these poor people lived in bombed out buildings on a half of a building. And it was disgusting. The camps, horrific camps, people being paraded all over the world, living in tents. Very different reading it and seeing it. Very different when it's someone else and when it affects you or your family. And I'm sure there would be Republicans who would change the way they looked at things if something that horrific happened within their family.
And
it's something you never want to see.
I would tend to agree because, as you said, people, if they don't feel it pertains to them, it doesn't touch them.
Right.
Something gets near them. It enters their spheres of identification and awareness. Then these become threats. I hope nothing ever happens to anybody. This charge shouldn't touch anybody.
No one wants to see it happen. But when it does happen, it does affect how you see things. It does affect you. There was something that was very interesting that happened as well with our Justice Supreme Court member, Brett Kavanaugh. And that just happened, I think it was today. Let me pull that up because I have to see the detail because it just was on in terms of the news of what happened, but there was a threat on his life. And I'm sure it was very scary because, again, it was a California man. He's in custody, and he said he wanted to kill Judge Brett Kavanaugh. And I love it because it says here, armed man arrested near Brett Kavanaugh's home. He's charged with attempting to murder a U.S. judge. He was near the home in Maryland. Now, this guy was about 26. He called. He didn't do it. And this makes me question how serious he was. I think he's more about trying to show something, make a point. He called emergency authorities saying he was having suicidal thoughts and he was had a firearm in his suitcase and he was going to kill a specific Supreme Court judge, according to an FBI affidavit that was filed. So that's interesting. The affidavit said Roski was upset about the leak of the opinion related to abortion rights, an upcoming gun control case, and the shooting last month in Texas. And he believed the justice he intended to kill would side with Second Amendment decisions that would loosen the gun control law. and he wanted to give his life a purpose, kill him after he broke into his home. Well, I think it's interesting. I think it's very, very interesting because, again, when you're a Supreme Court judge, you're sitting up there and you're looking at the written word in a document of the law. And it's a semantics about words, not about how it affects people's lives. So many situations in a court of law are won by a twisting of words and interpretation of law, because you can interpretation of law can be done so many different ways. So I'm sure this was really interesting in the sense of, again, subjectivity versus objectivity. They're on the bench and they're looking at things. There are those that look at things as the letter of the law. And there are those that look at things in terms of humanity, the many out there that have to live by the words and the decisions of law.
Yes, very, very true. And we're watching a lot of that play out now with the January 6th investigation.
Yes, and tomorrow they will talk about their findings. And again, we will see subjectivity and objectivity, because there are certain aspects. You are not supposed to breach a federal building. If it happens, you or I did it, we'd be thrown in jail. But when someone deems that they can do it because they have rationalized in their mind that they're going to make some kind of a statement or prevent something, but now you're going into it. I'll never forget that. I will never forget these lunatics screaming, yelling, raving, ranting. And it made me think back to the days of the Wild West. And they're going to tie this one up. They're going to hang this one. And people don't realize the power of words and that it's very easy to agitate someone. But again, talking about someone that's willing to take the law into their own hands and persecute innocent people because of their because of what they're going through, rather than find a way to deal with it. And we saw that there, you know, maybe one or two would think these things, but when it starts coming out and you get a mob together, suddenly logic is thrown out the window. Logic is thrown out the window. And the violence was beyond belief. Was beyond belief. And again, that empowerment. Empowerment is a scary thing. Yes, the empowerment is great when people need to be heard and they need to do certain things and be themselves. But when it's empowerment that you feel that you need to break every law to get the result that you want. And that's the thing, the result that you want. That is immaturity. Plain and simple, because as a child, you learn there are things, there are rewards and consequences in life. If you work, you should make money, get a job. Hopefully, you know, there are unions that will protect your rights again. But to think that you're going to, my decision is the only one that matters, or because I believe it this way, it should be that way. But meanwhile, if someone else wanted to do it, well, no, that's not the case because it doesn't abide by my subjective attitude. So it's a hard thing to live side by side with other human beings. But then it does work if you sit down and take into account why they're saying those things or that person's needs, because life is compromise. Never all one way, but that's obviously a lesson that some have never learned.
Nope. And we've seen what's happened. Some people even said it was a typical tourist day, that there was nothing going on, despite the evidence of your eyes.
Well, it's kind of hard, right, when you've seen the pictures.
And
then I still have a hard time, too, with those that went to court and said, yeah, I'm guilty. I've got to deal with this. But it wasn't my fault. What does that sound like? It wasn't my fault. He told me to do it. Well, he was using you to get the end result he wanted. You have to stop and think, and you're accountable for your actions, just as a child supposedly is, you know. Again, depending on the given situation in the school or the parent, and it's the same with adults. You know, some are allowed to do this and that, and then those, and then some feel they have the right subjectively. I feel it's this way, therefore it must be this way. So we really need to be looking in this country at how we deal with power, why do we feel we need to have a cachet of weapons. That's not protection. That's about power. And why do you feel you need to have that kind of power? These are the kind of things that have to be addressed, besides, again, going into these little localities where people refuse to see anything other than what they have known and their type of living. And we've seen it with certain religions, and we've seen it in certain areas where they're just non-acceptance of anything other than what exists to them.
You're very true, and unfortunately we're running out of time today. I knew we wouldn't fit everything that you wanted to talk about on the show, but we did cover a lot, and thank you for that. I'm going to be starting a bunch of new initiatives this year, and we'll talk about them off the phone in the very near future. And then I'm going to start some shows where we can invite guests and we can more effectively address these things. So I'll leave things on a mysterious note. Are there any last words you'd like to leave with people regarding objectivity and subjectivity?
Well, I'm just going to mention this. We need to step back for a minute and see the total picture and not just the little one that we're in. Again, that phrase, you know, a timepiece works because all the gears are working together. It takes a lot of different gears, small ones, big ones, thin ones, thick ones, and that's why things work. You know, when we see that we're the only gear, that's where the problem comes in. And the other thing, too, is that we have to look at lobbying. The NRA is a very big lobbyist. This country needs to change lobbying laws with money, because money causes a lot of problems, and we see it not just with the NRA, but we see it with pharma and healthcare. We've mentioned that in other shows. Two lobbyists for every congressman. And as long as you make money an issue for campaigns, and you have something like Citizen United where some can donate a ridiculous amount of money, it's got to change. That is the beginning of changing the way things are done in this country, or why people need to fight for their jobs because they don't have enough money and they'll respond. I mean, you just go online and look into the donations, and that's not even all the ones that are reported. They're the ones that aren't reported.
Very, very true. Astrid, thank you so very much. I wish you well in all your endeavors, and I will give you a call tomorrow.
Definitely. Take care, and best wishes for all our listeners, you know, and just take a step back and let's start looking at the total picture. Many do, but then there are many that don't.
Thanks again, and thanks to all who are listening. Whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, called and are patiently waiting in our queue, or whether you'll be checking us out later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Thanks again, Astrid, and good night, everybody.
And thank you.